It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that's why I'm putting on the grant applications a study of the long-term effects of overabundance of food coloring agents, because I figured I'm more likely to get the money than if I just say attempting to turn my shit rainbow.
Yeah, that's probably smart.
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
The premise is similar.
Honestly, I think describing it in the latter fashion would pique a lot of interest.
Probably
wouldn't.
No, you know what I think would honestly happen if I did that? They would refuse it, and then one of them would do it.
Yeah.
No, I
do. That's,
totally.
Yeah.
This sounds way more dry.
Right, and boring. So they'll just rubber stamp it, and then you can go do what you want to do.
Exactly. So
yeah,
to speak.
Smart. Very smart.
So tonight, before you show up, I'm eating my supper, and I'm watching Seinfeld. We've discussed you're somewhat familiar with Seinfeld.
Yeah, a little bit.
Do you recall that it became sort of meta near the end, and they were attempting to create a sitcom for NBC?
About nothing.
Yes. They were essentially, it was the story of them actually creating this show, sort of, but in comedic fashion.
Sure.
So, tonight, the info says the episode is called The Pilot, and it is the episode where they actually tape the pilot of that sitcom. Like, they actually film it and tape it. I think the description says film, taped, and something. And then there's a side issue because the president of NBC is obsessed with Elaine, whatever. This is what the description says. I'm familiar with this episode.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the episode that's showing.
Mm.
And because it is what it is, it's very obvious to tell. It's the pilot of Seinfeld.
Oh.
Like, the whole apartment looks slightly different. They say things that, like, don't match with continuity later. I just thought it was, every once in a while you get weird mistakes like that with the digital cable, and I thought that one was pretty funny. Like, no, it's not the episode, the pilot. It's the pilot episode.
Ooh.
Which maybe doesn't have a name, I don't know.
I don't know.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that has cockfighting going on in the back during the recording. Or at least the only podcast in the world willing to admit to it.
Yeah, but I asked you not to talk about that in my presence because, you know.
Yeah. Well, and
I'm not good at lying.
In case people are confused, it's absolutely illegal in Iowa, like everywhere
else.
Yes,
that's right. So if someone asks me about it, you know, I'm not really.
Yeah, no, it's fine. There's two factors. Well, there's three factors. People, I'm good at lying.
Yeah. Well, then that's fine. But
nobody talks to you.
Oh, well, that's true.
And nobody listens to the show, so we're good.
Okay.
I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 317.
I think I've decided that our hip-hop duo name is MC Adipose and DJ Scrawny Claws.
Oh.
But I think we have to spell Claws like C, maybe with a K, actually, and get really weird with it, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe a 3 instead of a W, because it's like a sideways W.
I like it.
And,
I'll take it. We should make up t-shirts right away.
Uh-huh.
That's always the first step.
T-shirts.
Yep. When you're.
Oh, I've been watching Silicon Valley. I know. Yep.
When you're embarking.
It's definitely the first.
That's
step.
Right. When you're embarking on a new artistic, creative project, t-shirts and coffee mugs.
And coffee
the
mugs.
The first thing.
Frisbees, mouse pads. Mouse pads are.
Yeah, that,
critical.
That's right.
Mouse pads. Which is funny because for decades, people would get those as part of their merch, and I didn't understand why. And then computer mouse got invented, and it was like, before this, like, this is just a soft, unframed picture. That's weird. For those of you just joining us, here's how the show works. We have a hat. Is magic really got you that soft picture thing?
Yeah, that's good. I like it a lot.
We have a hat. It's magic. In that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks like yourselves, cool people, Write into that address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, little comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them, manifest physically within the hat itself. We, it's Etruscan servants, I feel like I've used that before, but it's a solid one.
Okay.
Draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them until we're bored, do that for about an hour, that's the whole show. Have you noticed now I've started incorporating vaguely flight attendant-like hand gestures in the process?
Didn't notice that.
Yeah, no, I've started doing that.
Well done.
Or like the one, like when a person pretends they know sign language and does a bunch of stuff, that's kind of what I'm doing. Yeah, or like the worst musical theater performers.
Mm-hmm.
How was your week?
It's all right. We saw Doctor Strange.
Oh, you had not seen Doctor Strange?
No.
Oh. And what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, it's not really my kind of thing, but I was impressed with how well-crafted it was. It was a very well-crafted film, I thought. Like, they had a lot of, you know, visual sequences. I mean, some of them weren't that interesting because you feel like we saw this in Inception kind of thing. But there,
sometimes they used that same technique and did some really interesting stuff.
And
that opening scene really got me.
The first time the larger world was revealed to him, it was a long sequence.
But
wow, was it interesting. I mean, you could tell this wasn't just,
well, yeah, apparently if you pause it, like, you can see all sorts of things.
Oh yeah, there was a lot of thought put into this. It was brilliant. And
I'm pretty sure he's going to show up in the Infinity War stuff. So okay,
well, I just thought it was, overall, it was really well crafted. It's not a character I care that much about, and I the movie didn't change my mind about that, but I had to give it props for being a very well crafted film.
It is a character I don't know a lot about, but there is a character on Venture Brothers that is a total parody of Doctor Strange that I love. And so I kind of got there through that. But Dan, who went and saw it with me, he's like, from a little kid, putting on his red bathroom towel and pretending to be Doctor Strange.
Really?
Like, yeah. Because I would lean over and ask him stuff, and I'm like, is it really just called The Cape of Levitation? Because that's a boring as shit name. He's like, no, that's what it's called.
Well, what did he think of the film in terms of its fidelity to the source material, things like that?
Pretty good, actually.
Really?
I think. The actual, insofar as there are Doctor Strange-related plot points, they did pretty good. Obviously, they did their own deal with the Ancient One, and that got weird. And somebody in the movie who will eventually sort of switch moral sides, in the comics, was always like that, and this was just sort of backstory about them, so that's a little different. Which I will say, actually, the post-credits thing kind of annoyed me. It seemed like such a jarring character shift all of a sudden like that. But I love the actors.
One thing that...
The opening took a while. I was like, we know what's going to happen here. He's a smug surgeon. Can we get to the part where he's humbled so then he can learn and grow? And I'm like, can we just move through the part where he's a shithead, please? I actually believe I said that to him as I was watching the movie. I leaned over to Dan and said that.
One thing that they did that worked fine in the film, like I said, it was a very well-crafted film, I thought. But that I'm noticing a lot of magic-oriented comic stories is doing.
Hmm.
You know, elaborate hand movements.
Yeah.
And then, along with the hand movements, these, you know, usually circular graphics with a bunch of symbols and stuff
in
it.
That has become a thing.
That is very much a thing. Like, I saw that in Justice League Dark, the animated thing.
Oh, did
you? In Injustice 2, all the trailers, like, that show Dr. Fate, who arguably is the counterpart to Doctor Strange in the Marvel Universe, he does the same thing. He does all these little hand gestures, and then this little circular sigil or glyph thing will pop up and is supposed to symbolize the magical power.
I'm trying to think of where the earliest version of that I remember comes from, and I think it's from an anime And a couple, actually. I think I primarily started seeing that in anime first.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
But only from, like, 10 years ago or so, yeah. I think it is that thing. I think we're trying to incorporate what we think of as the cool concept of symbology,
mm-hmm.
but in an action-y oriented sort of way.
It doesn't really work for me, visually. Yeah. I didn't mind it in the film, but I keep seeing it, and it's not a choice I would make if I were directing a film, but it worked out pretty good.
You can speak to this some, although you had less experience with the books than I did. I was getting so many shades of Harry Dresden in Doctor Strange's personality.
Oh, yeah, sure.
There were a lot of times I'm like, that could straight up be a line that Jim Butcher wrote. But, of course, could be cheating. I'm like, or Jim Butcher was heavily influenced by Doctor Strange and didn't realize it. But, like, yeah, there were just a lot of parallels, which I really enjoyed because, you know, I'm a big fan.
Right.
And I thought that the ultimate sort of victory concept was pretty clever. I liked it.
Yeah, well,
and I feel like they set it up well. Like, it wasn't in your face, but it was one of those, like, the reveal, and you're like, oh, yeah, this, and oh, yeah.
Yeah, like I said, very well-crafted, yeah. I thought. But it kind of depressed me in a way, because I don't know how it did in the box office, but I don't think it's considered one of the top-tier Marvel movies, probably.
No, I think it did very well, but I don't think it broke any records.
But that's just it. I mean, here's a film, very well-crafted. It did well enough box office wise, and it's just, why can't DC even with a second rate property? And DC could, I mean, there's a lot of second rate properties in DC that they could do something with.
Well,
you know,
got one. No, wait, that's Shazam. That's technically not a second rate property. But they're pulling out.
But I'm thinking of, like, okay, so Marvel did Guardians of the Galaxy. Well, yes. DC has a character named Adam Strange, no relation.
Yes.
But that could be a very similar type of thing. It's not a very well-known property, but if the right person got a hold of it, it could be wildly successful, because it's got that that classic ray gun sort of sensibility kind of get with Guardians of the Galaxy, that sort of revives people's nostalgia for things like Star Wars and old Battlestar Galactica and stuff.
James Gunn, they pulled Guardians of the Galaxy out of there. Like, that was such an old and fairly unsuccessful comic.
Right.
And it was, I mean, I'm sure they got away with it because Marvel itself was like, oh, give it a shot.
Right, but someone saw
and
that.
And yet it was awesome.
Someone saw that it had cinematic potential as something like
somebody's calling me.
Something like Adam Strange would, too.
Yeah.
So, but DC isn't thinking
Well, and to be fair, thinking that way once they got on their feet.
Well, okay.
They started with Iron Man, Hulk.
Sure,
you know,
sure, sure.
These kind of things. So if DC can find its footing,
I don't even know.
Maybe they can.
I don't even know. I'm losing total faith in the people that are running, you know, who are running the show. I think maybe that whole group of people needs to be replaced, because.
Oh, I'd say absolutely, but I think that's true for almost all movie studios. And it just doesn't.
But Marvel's, I mean, like Ant-Man, for example.
Marvel's doing okay.
There's a movie I saw. That, again, top tier, no. But I thought, this is put together pretty well. I was entertained by it. Didn't have any problems with it at all. It's like, and DC can't even do this much with, I don't know. It just.
Well, but they're trying not to just look like an exact copy. And to be fair, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is starting to look a little formulaic.
Oh, I suppose that's true, yeah.
Every movie's kind of got the same, hitting the same points. Nothing is too brave. I mean, I think the last real brave decision they made was Iron Man 3, and that was sort of the mental illnessy stuff, and that barely. I mean, Civil War. I enjoyed Civil War. They didn't take any chances with Civil War.
Right, I gotcha.
And so it's a very safe bet, and it's possible that DC just doesn't. Being the second guys to do that could get you shit on. But mostly I think the people running the DC stuff are just lunatics.
Well, that's what I think.
And you know, the employment of Zack Snyder, I feel, is Exhibit A.
Yeah, that's the biggest mistake right there.
Yeah.
Biggest mistake. But we didn't really do much of anything.
Did you watch
else.
The End of Legion?
Yeah, that we did. Yeah.
Did you see the freaky post-credit sequence?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I mean, we watched the whole thing, as far as I know. But then again,
something very big happened at the very end that was somewhat traumatic and was a major cliffhanger for the next season. Like at the very end, like in the last seconds.
I probably did,
but
I don't...
To your credit, I forgot what it was until I read a thing about it again. But, not to your credit, it's kind of a big deal. So I also forgot, and I don't know why.
Okay. I don't... And you can't say because we're on the air.
I'm trying to figure out how to... I don't mind this exactly, but there's a thing.
Okay.
Thing, and there's our hero, and the balcony, and the thing, and...
I might not have even
you should watch that
seen that. Well, I don't know. I mean, remember, for me to watch Legion, I have to cheat.
Yes.
And sometimes the cheat thing
also has a couple sets of credits, which confuses me. They do credits and then they do commercials and then they do a different set of credits.
Okay, so sometimes the little things you use to watch shows on the cheat cut stuff off at the end.
Then before you leave, I'll show you because the AV Club had the.
Oh, okay. Well, that'll be good. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Really enjoying Hamish Linklater. He plays the guy with the cane. At the bad guy.
Oh,
in
okay.
The last
sure,
episode.
Sure, sure.
Sorry, his name always stood out to me, and that's the thing. My entire experience with him is he played the brother of Julia Louis-Dreyfus on New Adventures of Old Christine. And he was on the, and I only watched like one episode of the show, but that weird sitcom they did with Robin Williams and Sarah Michelle Gellar on CBS, he was like one of the other guys working there.
Mm.
But he's done crap parts, but he always does them really well. And it was really fun to see him into something more meaty. I do wonder if he's related to the comics, because they put in a lot of detail to him that seemed really out of nowhere.
Very specific, too.
And exactly, yeah. And Trish was talking about that. She's like, why did they do that? I'm like, maybe he's somebody in the comics, and that's just the truth about him.
Yeah, when you watch DC TV shows, it's the same thing. Like, boy, they're really spending a lot of time looking at that guy's cane. Are we supposed to recognize that?
Yeah.
Is that iconic? And I just don't know that obscure character.
I know very little about the comics, about Legion, but I do know sort of two major aspects. And if you know there was an absolute confirmation of that one of the things is going to be like in the comics, if you know. If you don't, like my wife doesn't, it means absolutely nothing to you. But there is one thing that is just like 100% obvious. The second aspect of it, I feel like, and it's a major sort of part of the concept, and the way they're doing it, it seems like they're going in a very different direction, which I'm kind of happy about, because I like it when they sort of get original.
Well, not just that, but the comic's not that interesting, what they end up doing with that character.
Yeah, but just in general, like what they say is going on with David in the TV show, and what was actually going on with David in the comics are... slightly different.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
And I think that's going to be better.
Yeah, I do too. I agree. I agree with that.
Yeah.
But, you know, what did you want to say about your week?
I had two things that you were supposed to help me remember.
And I guess I just did.
No, because I only remember one of them. What's the other one?
Well, what's the one you remember?
I remember the one about authentic Irish setter.
About what?
Authentic Irish setter.
That's not one of the things you wanted me to remind you
about. Absolutely one of the things.
No, you wanted me to remind you about something about the male version of Carrie in Legion.
Oh, yeah.
And a song, Paris, by the Chainsmokers.
That's the authentic Irish setter one. Sorry, I didn't think about it.
Authentic Irish setter?
Yeah. I'm explaining this to you.
Because you didn't mention that at all.
No. This is everybody get ready here. This is one of those trips into Tony's brain.
What's the male version of Carrie?
You want that one first?
Oh, okay. Well, you're going to remember then. I don't have to remember now.
Yeah. As soon as you said that, I knew what that one was.
Okay.
Hey, little guy.
The producer has just come home from her errands.
Hey, headers.
We were just talking about Doctor Strange and Legion, because William just saw Doctor Strange and we all just saw Legion. William did not see the post-credit sequence in Legion. I'm going to have to show it to him after the podcast.
Ow.
In this light, I actually can't tell which kitty that is.
It's the little bitey guy.
Okay. I thought it might be the little bitey girl. Okay. So yeah, we're gonna go into my brain here.
Oh no.
Yep.
Nobody wants
that. I'm telling them the authentic Irish setter story.
I knew it reminded me of something. Do you want to know what it reminds me of?
Is it going to spoil my story in any way with you saying
that? Okay, you tell your story and then I'll tell you.
All right, mine's going to take a bit though, because it's me.
God.
Go. So.
Now you have to wait.
There's a song by a electronic music group called The Chainsmokers.
Electronic? Is that what you'd call that?
Yeah, they're on my EDM station most of the time, so. I guess they're sort of getting into poppy realm. I mean, they're popular. You've heard Don't Let Me Down was on the radio for them. And then this one has been on the radio recently. It's called Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Nice song. I like it. Whatever. Been listening to it a bit. And the chorus to the song goes, "If we go down, then we go down together. They'll say you could do anything. They'll say that I was clever. If we go down, then we go down together. We'll get away with everything. Let's show them we are better."
Right.
At some point, I was listening to this for a few days. I tend to do that. I fixate on a song and I listen to it a lot. And so it was kind of in my head and I was sort of singing along at times. And I realized that I could, and in fact was, periodically, for no reason that I could figure out, switching the last chunk of each stanza. So they'll say that I was clever, or we'll show them we are better, with the phrase authentic Irish setter.
Okay.
Because it works in the rhythm, the rhyme, and the scan. Like, it fits perfectly.
Sure.
The question becomes, where the hell did I get that phrase?
I don't
in my mind, no one in the world has ever said authentic Irish setter. That sounds ridiculous. What the hell is that? I'm a broken person, so I kind of assume it's just something sick in my head. And then one day, when we're driving home, it hits me. I know where it's from. And as with all things of significance in my life...
Simpsons?
Yep.
Good job.
Thank you.
And a lot of you who don't keep
this... It's only taken me 6 years to figure this out.
As long as I do, still might do this, because this was an old and fairly well-known episode. The episode in which... Santa's Little Helper had puppies, had I believe 25 puppies, and technically he was the father, so a girl dog had them, but you know what I mean. And Mr. Burns took them, stole them eventually, I believe.
A la 101 Dalmatians?
Yes,
kind of thing?
Yes.
Exactly.
And that's the thing, he wanted to turn them into a tuxedo, a greyhound fur tuxedo. The kids, going to find out, sneaking around the house, looking in the window, learn this via musical number.
Oh, okay.
It is a musical number parodying the Beauty and the Beast song, Be Our Guest.
Okay.
Called See My Vest.
Okay.
And it is all about the various animals he has killed to make clothes.
Right.
And it starts with, see my vest, made from real gorilla chest.
Jeez.
And it actually looks like, yeah. Things like this, yes. Grizzly bear underwear, turtles' necks. I've had my share, and you see him wearing an actual, like, tortoise. Stuff like this. Like, my loafers, former gophers. It was that, or skin my chokers.
Now, how do you remember all this? That's...
I've seen this episode so many times, and it's an incredibly catchy song.
Yeah,
the point being...
There's a point?
There is a line in which he says, "And this sweater, there's no better than authentic Irish setter."
Ooh.
And that is why I was doing that.
Why did it take you so long to figure that out?
Because it's been... I don't know. Because authentic Irish setter is the craziest one.
Yeah, but you're sitting here reciting the entire episode to me, so it's obviously in there.
It's all in there, dude.
I think you're getting old, man.
It doesn't mean the recall is there.
I think it's an age problem.
It's like...
It's an indexing problem.
Here's the thing. Yeah. In this conversation, I am confident you have said something that is an exact quote from a Simpsons episode.
Oh, yeah, probably.
But I'm not going to remember until like 6 years from now and be like, holy shit, that was, I don't even think he knew he was quoting Milhouse in that line. You know, that kind of thing. All right, so this has led the producer to her story. But yeah, you might want to get in here, like, where they can pick up your
whatever
voice.
Whatever. Because when you told me this, I was like, this reminds me of something. But I had trouble figuring it out.
Okay, you might need to speak up. I don't know.
Whatever.
Oh, they can hear.
Have you seen the Muppets?
I have seen Muppets.
Like, the Muppet movie.
The first one, I believe so.
So, Rolf the dog sings this song about his bad luck with women.
This sounds familiar.
And he says, what could be better than a saucy Irish setter when puppy love comes on strong?
Boy, I forgot all about
he
that.
He sings it lower.
Or a collie that's classy. A laddie needs a lassie.
That's cute. You're
a
cheating.
Lover
She's
and
cheating,
wife.
By the way. She's looking up. Because
I learned
lyrics.
This song when I was like six. I'm like, what saying. Is the actual line there? A lover and wife gives you a new leash on life. And Kermit says, did you just say leash? And he's like, sorry.
Because back then puns were still new. And they weren't comfortable with them at that point.
Tonight, Kirk made told Rita, I said, I found an interesting rock in your yard. And so then he came over and was looking at it, and Kirk looked at it, and he said, dude, that's rockin'. And Reed starts laughing because he's
of
like,
of course, Reed thinks puns are hilarious.
Right? And he says, I got that one, and then walks off. I'm like, good job, dude.
Nice. To be fair, given his father, he should be a master of puns by now.
Right? Okay.
Also,
I'm out.
Sexual innuendo.
This is the one I sing in.
This is the one she sings in.
Yeah. That's the title.
Yeah.
The one she sings in. I feel like that works.
Yep.
And then it sounds Beautiful. Like an episode of Friends, which is always good.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Everybody wants to listen then.
Yeah, authentic Irish setter. All right, so now you want to hear about the guy who plays the male.
You wanted to talk about
Carrie.
It.
Yes, because I was fascinated by this.
Okay.
So, there's a male character in Legion. No spoilers. There's a male character in Legion named Carrie. There is a scene in an episode, recently saw, one of the later episodes, in which he is walking with someone who seems somewhat unhappy. And in an attempt to cheer them up, he pulls out a handkerchief that's connected to another handkerchief that's connected, you know, the old clown trick or magician trick.
Yeah.
He pulls out a length of multicolored
handkerchief. Yeah, I remember this now.
That twigged something in my brain. So I looked it up, and I know this guy from when I was, like, little. The actor is named Bill Irwin, and he's been in quite a few things. He's been a serious actor for quite a while.
This guy who was in Legion.
Yes.
Oh yeah, he's been a lot of things.
But he used to be his original discipline is mime, and he used to do stuff where he would do like clowns. And the specific thing I remember is there was an episode on the Cosby Show in which a child's entertainer did all these tricks, and he had almost no lines, but he did all these tricks and stuff, and that was him.
No kidding.
Yeah, and I think I saw him in a bunch of other stuff, like some PBS things or whatever, where he did a lot of. He would dress sort of Buster Keaton-ish, except it was more colorful.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right. I remember that.
And then he would do sort of clowny bits, and he would very seldom have... It wasn't quite mime, but he didn't talk a lot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's him.
Yeah.
And that was the thing. There was just something about that moment, because his face looks different. He's much older, but you can still sort of see it. And something about him doing that, I'm like, I've seen him do that before. And
yeah.
I remembered the Cosby Show thing. And it was hilarious to find out I was right.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
So that was kind of cool.
Because he didn't do anything like that in the whole rest of the show.
So one
moment, yeah, one moment he did something like that.
And I looked him up, and it turns out, yeah, he has, for quite some time, been doing serious acting. He's been in a bunch of movies and TV shows, in things that I think have nothing to do with mime. But I did find out that was his deal.
Yeah, I forgot he did stuff like that in the early days. Because I just remember, I don't remember it. Like, I can't remember specifically what it was. I just recognized him when I saw him in the show.
Yeah. Oh, so you knew.
Well, I knew he was someone who'd been in a lot of stuff. I'd forgotten all about that whole, when he did that, it didn't spark a memory in me like, oh, he was that guy.
Yeah.
No, I didn't remember that.
I feel like that character on the Cosby. I had a thing, I don't know that I had a real fear of clowns. Mimes were weird to me. I think the silence freaked me out. So I think that was a thing. There's not much else. I'm playing Dragon Age. I want to say I'm getting into it again, but that seems to only be true while I'm playing it, because then I'll wait a few days before I play it again, kind of thing. But it's kind of fun. We just went through the Well of Sorrows a bit, which was rough. A lot of major decisions had to happen there, and it was very... without a lot of information involved. Like, I was very uncomfortable. And especially because it involves characters from earlier games. So, like, my character in this game might trust them, but having played with them before, the player knows not to trust them. And that was weird. I was like, okay, should I roleplay this? Or should I... You know, I'm not sure. So, but yeah, I went through that. And then, yeah, literally, like, we got back from that, and then I haven't touched it since.
Well, we have played quite a bit of Mass Effect since last I talked to you.
How is that going? It's
good. I mean, we keep hearing that some
people
aren't...
People are still mostly complaining.
Yeah, that people aren't happy with it, but we can't figure out why.
At this point, a lot of it is bugs.
Okay, well, and there are those, but it's not... You always get that with a brand new game. It's not more than usual.
Well, you always get that with certain companies' brand new games.
But
some companies are not shitty enough to put out a game when it's not ready.
It's not that bad. But, and to me, it's not. But the tone is very different. And again, if people don't like that, I get that part, but we don't mind it. So my wife really super likes it. She loves playing.
That gives me hope, because I totally am going to play it eventually.
The very early aspects of it really has that space cowboy vibe that she loves. Mm. Loves that. So
I can't remember.
Really
did
into
she
it.
Play Rebel Galaxy or whatever the one I was talking about?
I don't think so.
You should check that out. I think that would be right up her alley.
Hmm.
It's just off the network, so I think, I don't know, I got it from PlayStation Plus, so, but I think it's, I mean, it's, I think it's a cheap game, I don't think it's a full price kind of game.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's all I got.
Okay.
I feel like there's more in there, but not really.
Coffee wants to know...
What does coffee want to know?
Do you make decisions yourself, or does someone make them for you?
Yes. I think this is a subtle question.
Okay.
Because I think we're not always aware who's making decisions for us. I think sometimes we might think it's us, but it's not. Or sometimes we might try and convince ourselves that it's someone else, when it's really us.
Well, I mean, certainly in a country such as ours, with a government such as ours, there are lots of people making decisions on our behalf all the time, whether we want that to happen or not, or whether we approve of those decisions or not. But, I mean, like, on a day-to-day basis,
I think in my marriage it can get cloudy sometimes. I think there's sometimes Trish tricks me.
Tricks you.
Well, and then there's other times where I blame something on, well, because Trish said I had to, or Trish did this, so I have to, but it's like, no, I'm deciding to do that.
Well, then sometimes, there's the whole thing about your activity online, and did you really click that because you were interested, or did the clickbait work, and you were tricked into clicking that
thing? And I'm really, I want to experience it. I don't think it's correct to call it hypnosis, per se, but that sort of mental trickery... The great example is, you've seen the video, right, where there's a mentalist with Simon Pegg?
Mm-mm.
There's a mentalist, and he's with Simon Pegg, and he has Simon Pegg write down a favorite, what he always wanted for Christmas as a kid, basically, or something like that.
But didn't get, or something?
Yeah. And write it down, and hold on to it, and keep it closed, and put it in his pocket, or whatever. And then they have a long talk about things. And you find out later... The guy is using keywords and, like, directing focus and stuff towards something specific.
Mm.
And by the end, he says, I've got that gift here already in a box that was already sitting there. And they open it up, and it's a kid's bicycle. And Simon Pegg is absolutely amazed, because that is exactly what he wanted. And he remembers as a kid when he asked his parents. And the guy's like, no, that's not true. And they pull out the piece of paper, and it's, I forget what it says, but it's not a bike.
Mm.
And Simon Pegg is like, but it was. That's, and he's like, no, I put all of that in your head during this conversation. Mm. And it's like super, like, it's not at all nebulous. Like, the whole thing is literally, like, Simon Pegg is clearly like, but I remember that. And he's like, nope, I put it in there. And I find it fascinating, and I can't even, like, I've read some on the mechanics a little bit, but I want somebody to do it to me, because I'm like, I can't, my brain cannot accept that that's possible. Like, I know that that's a thing, I saw it, but, like, I don't really believe it.
Coincidentally, I've been, you know Mick, our mutual friend Mick.
I do, in fact.
And I've, you know, I've known him since high school.
Forever.
And his family.
Yes. I hear sometimes they let you use their house for films. Maybe they'll let you use for this new one.
That's right. I
think that's going to be a really good film.
I totally spaced the fact that we made a film at their house. But anyway.
Really? Because this is like the seventh time I brought it up on
know,
this podcast.
So weird. But anyway.
Because I'm a mentalist. I convinced you we made it somewhere else.
Anyway. So, his mom was actually a teacher at the school. So she.
Call her.
So anyway. Recently, she's decided that she's ready. She currently works as a therapist, counselor kind of thing.
Okay.
And she's decided she's ready to introduce the world to her own specific and personal approach to therapy that she thinks works in a particular way.
The mixed mom way.
Right. Now, I don't know
path if to mixed mom.
You're aware that I studied counseling psych for a little. I took some graduate courses.
I don't,
but
I'm supremely unsurprised.
So I do know a little bit about those things. And I've done some counseling in my own life in certain capacities, but never, like, licensed or anything like that. But I know, she knows I'm familiar enough with these things that I can work with her on this stuff, because she wants me to help her, you know, get the book together and maybe a presentation she can take to conferences and whatever. So that's something I've been doing quite a lot of.
Okay.
But one of her, the main people that she's interested in incorporating into what she's doing is the work of Erickson. Gosh, what's his first name?
Leaf.
No, starts with an M. Anyway, Erickson.
Leaf.
But he was a Erickson. He was like, if you know anything about the world of therapy, you know, since Freud or whatever, he's like the hypnotherapist, the guy.
Okay.
He used hypnosis in most of what he did, and so I'm reading a lot about him to help her out with her thing. And one, I just got done reading about a case he did. That might interest you, based on what you just said. This woman, she was married and she'd just become pregnant, and she had a ton of anxiety about how her kid was going to turn out, because her mother was not a very good parent.
Okay.
And her father was, you know, this was in an era where her dad wasn't around a lot, and it was okay for him not to be a very good parent, but when he was there, he was okay. But anyway. And she hung out in circles with therapists and whatever. So what she said was she knew too much psychology. Like, so I know that I'm probably been affected by my mom, and that's going to affect what kind of mother I am. And so I'm really worried about what kind of mom I'm going to be.
Okay.
All right. So what Erickson did was he interviewed her extensively, like hours of interviews, and gathered all this information. And then he put her in hypnotic trances, and had her regress to certain ages, like when she was 4. Now, the reason he collected all this information ahead of time was because what he was going to do was he was going to introduce himself as a friend of the family that she met when she was 4. But he didn't want anything in introducing that scenario to contradict what she actually remembered, because that would mess up the effect. So he would have like 3 and 4 hour long sessions with her where he was introducing himself as a person that she had met before on several occasions in her life. And they were specific occasions where she experienced specific things in relation to her mom, and he helped her work them out in that setting. So what he did was he created a situation where in her mental experience, it was like he heard her complaint and then traveled back in time to
give her support.
Yeah, to specific points in time to help her through things until eventually she was over all that stuff.
So does she come out the other side thinking of him as a lifelong friend, I wonder?
Yeah.
Because then you can totally borrow money.
Except he put in the hypnotic suggestion that she would remember that that wasn't true.
Yeah.
But he didn't always do that. Sometimes he would hypnotize somebody and he would whatever he had to plant in there, the truth that was going to be therapeutic for them, he would leave it there, or he would mess around in someone's experiences and then give them the hypnotic suggestion to have amnesia about it. Okay. So they wouldn't remember. Whatever he thought the client needed to get their problem fixed.
And so he could borrow money. Come on, you know me forever. Come on.
But it was like really interesting what he did. And it totally helped her like be a good mom. But there was an epilogue to the whole thing. Mm. She also wanted him to help her have a painless delivery of the child. Now, but it was an unusual request in that what he usually gets is, I want you to teach me how to hypnotize myself so that it's like I'm under anesthesia during the delivery. Yeah. But she didn't want anesthesia. She wanted analgesic. She wanted to feel everything except the pain.
Okay.
So that was trickier. Mm-hmm. So he explained how he kind of went taught her to hypnotize herself to get around the problem of getting rid of the pain entirely, or getting rid of all feeling and just the stuff that wasn't pain, because it was really tricky. And apparently, she reported that she delivered this child without any pain but feeling everything else.
Hmm.
Can you imagine that?
I cannot, in fact.
That just blows.
I find this all fascinating, but it skirts the edge of my skepticism.
Mine too.
I would want to look into this.
Yeah, mine too.
Because there's a lot about the concept of hypnosis that is pure pseudoscience.
Yeah,
I'd say most. There is a narrow margin that tends to be medical therapy related stuff.
Yeah, he's a psychiatrist, MD. Yeah,
and this is like bumping Milton. Against the edges a little bit.
Milton Erickson. He's made. There are other claims in some of these books.
I still think it was Meef.
In these books I'm reading about him, where I'm thinking, no, that you're making that up. That can't be true.
Well, and what's the time period we're talking about?
Milton Erickson, almost 60s, maybe?
Okay.
50s, 60s?
Because, yeah, the further you go back, the more documentation and secondary corroboration.
Right, well, I mean, and there were other...
The 60s isn't as far back.
And there were other cases, like there was this guy who, he was just about to retire and get his pension, mm-hmm. but he had an injury that could potentially have taken his pension away.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up losing the use of one of his arms, but the doctors couldn't find anything wrong with him. So Erickson thought, well, he's having some kind of mental problem because of the fear of losing his pension. Because, I mean, pensions, right? I mean, that, back in the day, that's how you were going to survive after you were done with work. So what he did in that case, in several other cases, similar cases, he brought in all these people, and I think some of them were actual doctors, but they pretended that they were working on his case, and they discovered he had this rare and very severe syndrome. And they described to him how the syndrome would progress, and it involved him still having a problem with his arm, but it would end up being like just with his wrist or something. Mm. So he believed everything they said. That's what the symptoms evolved exactly as they told him, and he was able to go back to work. Mm. But he was never told that all of this was just a lie.
Yeah. No, I did something similar with Agitalin. He never actually had cancer. I talked with his wife.
No, no.
There were some issues he needed to work through.
You're talking about gaslighting. Stop it. This isn't gaslighting. Maybe it is kind of gaslighting.
No, it absolutely is kind of gaslighting.
I guess I didn't really think about that.
It's white gaslighting. It's like the white lie, you know?
White hat. White hat gaslighting, not black hat gaslighting.
No, and this is the thing. He had a lot to go through. He had a lot to overcome. I think he dug down deep and found resources of will he didn't have. But yeah, it was completely made up.
Well, I think that the science is there about how, I mean, basically, mentalists like this guy you're talking about, and even street magicians in being able to direct a person's attention. There's a lot of research done on how perception and how states of consciousness work, where, you know, there are ways that you can sort of put somebody into a little bit different state than the consciousness have, and then that makes them more prone to suggestion.
And I have known people who have done hypnotherapy to get rid of bad habits.
Not like smoking. I found
it incredibly successful.
Sure, sure, sure.
And I think some of it, I think it's another one of these things, like with so many medical things, and especially with health fads and so forth, I'm guessing it works better on some people and not on others.
Yeah, and that's often said, yeah.
And then the other thing that, from what I can find in terms of this, is hypnotherapy can do things. It can do some amazing things. Hypnotherapy and sort of mental manipulation. They're in specific categories, and then there are specific things that, like, can never happen at all. And I think that's part of the thing, is it gets conflated in a lot of cases. There's a lot of things you can do when hypnotizing people and stuff like that, and there's a lot of things you absolutely cannot do.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And well, I think they're not. It's not necessarily intuitive which is which.
Right.
I think it's weird.
Really, what you're doing is, there are very specific ways the mind works, and like any other machine that works in specific ways, you can hack it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it comes down to. But as you just pointed out, you can't hack a brain to do just any old thing.
Yeah.
I mean, the biggest reason that this hypnotherapy worked on this woman was she desperately wanted it. And she really believed in this guy's ability to do it. And I think those two things really were significant in her being willing to take and accept these suggestions. But one thing that I keep telling Sharon, that's Mick's mom, that's the person I'm working with, is that a lot of the stuff this guy does is what mentalists have done for years and years and years, and probably what people like witch doctors did for years and years and years in sort of giving people these weird rituals to do to make things happen.
Yeah.
They actually didn't have any magical functionality at all, but they did sort of hack the person's brain so that they were able to accomplish the thing that they wanted to accomplish.
And you've got variances of this where it's gets used in advertising and marketing all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Something recently was talking about and said, I think it was a psychologist on a video podcast I was watching, subliminal messaging is pretty much bullshit, but supraliminal messaging actually is pretty significant. And that's what you see in a lot of advertising, just the bombardment with it. If you're constantly seeing certain information, you start to internalize it.
Almost a brainwashing kind of effect.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I would suggest that the question, do you make decisions yourself or does someone make them for you? I think there's a presumption there of a solid and not fuzzy line between self and other that I don't think is actually real. There's a feedback loop sort of relationship between self and other that it actually is going to be very difficult in some circumstances, easier in other circumstances, I suppose, but very difficult in most life circumstances, actually, to really suss out whether or not a thing you're doing or a decision you're making is like 100% just you and not influenced by anything else.
Yeah.
In fact, it's kind of ridiculous to think that any decision you make isn't influenced by anyone or anything else.
My paying more attention to the news and to politics lately is really shoving that in my face, because I can see all the tricks that people that I consider opposing my viewpoints both are using and are being victims of.
Mm.
It's harder for me to see the ones that are being used on me by people that I agree with, but I know they're there.
Mm.
And I keep wanting to tell myself, oh, no, they're less there. Which may or may not be true, but really shouldn't impact my level of awareness.
I should still
be paying attention.
And incredulity,
And just stuff. There's so many things where it's like, oh, president sucks because of this. And I'm like, amen. And he sucks because of this. Yeah, and there's this. And I'm like, well, I mean, he sucks. He sucks a lot. But I'm like, that. But I'm like, I don't want to be like, no, I don't want to defend him. But I'm like, that's not really, either it's like, that's not really a big deal. Or it's like, I don't think he really does that. And that's the thing. And, like, I get really mad. And, I mean, I'm the guy who coined the phrase President Cheeto. I'm sure lots of other people did, too. I know. I'm not that original. But I've stopped using it, although I still do occasionally, because I do think it's mostly from decades of fake Tanner, which is his own goddamn fault. And his hair is ridiculous. But, like, the other one, there's a lot of fat jokes about him. And a lot of jokes about how much he likes KFC and shit like that. And just in general, jokes about how he looks bad or whatever. And I'm comfortable saying this. I don't like to do this, but I think he's a very ugly person. That may be colored by the fact that I think he's incredibly ugly on the inside, and sure. I can't separate that. But I do think he's a fairly unattractive-looking individual for a man his age. But so what? And that's the thing. When Seth Meyers rips into the president, and I love it, until he rips into, like, oh, he's fat or whatever, like, makes a joke about... Again, he's really big on making jokes about how much he likes KFC. And I'm just like, stop. You're making us look bad, and that doesn't matter. And there's so many other things you can still make fun of that are legit. So, knock it off.
Yeah.
That has been... So, I think we've talked about before this idea that... And I feel like you had a similar experience, I don't know, but I know other people who have. When I first took a gender studies course... in college, and there's that, like, and first you're like, oh yeah, I want to learn, and then you're like, okay, these are, they're written kind of, but then, like, it finally clicks and you're like, oh my god.
Yeah, for race and gender, really. You're at first you're thinking, wow, it seems like that's a stretch,
you're kind of,
and then you you're like, nope,
and me and one other student in our intro course were the ones who were just always fighting back, which was really hilarious, because you'd be like, yeah, the guys, no, I was a guy, the other person was actually a lesbian who we became friends bonding over how much we thought some of this feminist shit was bullshit. But then by the end, we were both, like, super on the train. Oh, my God. I'm going through this right now.
Okay.
Because of the body positivity stuff.
Oh, okay, sure.
Like, I mean, a lot of it is very obvious.
Yeah, yeah.
But now I'm getting bits of... And things with, like, people who are very intentionally trying to give body positive messages. And you're like, yeah, but... There's things and like there's ones that talk about it being okay to be fat, but the implication still seems to be that if you want to lose the weight, that's ideal and that's what you want to do. And it's like, we're still assuming that fat is the wrong way to be and stuff like that. And just lots of weird, subtle things just sort of everywhere that I'm just now seeing. And I'm too old to be going through one of these awareness things. It's tiring me out. But you see it everywhere.
It is stressful, isn't it?
I'm just too old, and I'm old now. I don't like change. I'm getting real close to the point where I'm gonna be one of those. I mean, I'm pretty hardcore liberal, but I'm gonna be like, okay, now you're going too far. Like, I see that coming in the next decade or two. Something's gonna come up, and I'm gonna be like, okay, that's just insane. And then I'll be the older generation. And then the younger generation will have to wait till we die off so they can have whatever their thing is.
Because you're saying the older you get, the harder it is and the less willing you are to even put yourself through all that.
Well, and your reference frame is different.
That's right.
Because, for instance, my views about technology, very different from my parents, because I was on a computer a lot when I was like 12, and sort of my adolescence was online. A lot of my adult personality was forged in social interactions exclusively online. My niece was born with that shit. And consequently, her view of technology and its uses and its limitations and its all sorts of aspects, you know, the privacy is a huge one, how you feel about your privacy, and it just keeps happening. And so now, you know, we had a generation before who were getting on board with interracial marriage, kind of, but homosexual marriage, even the people who were, like, totally pro, a lot of them were like, yeah, but marriage is a man-woman thing, you know. They totally deserve to be together, but no, not married, you know, that kind of thing. And now we're like, no, that's bullshit, there's no reason why they shouldn't, da-da-da-da. And there's going to be the next thing, you know? There's going to be a point at which they're going to try and provide government subsidies to the surgical costs of really involved other kin. And I'm going to be like, seriously, my taxes are paying to turn someone into a dragon?
Yeah, right.
What the fuck? I mean, you know, and actually, I might be okay with that one. But I mean, there's going to be something. And I think, I mean, you know, my parents are old, and they are liberal. They are quite liberal. They still don't get transgenderism entirely. Mm-hmm. Like, they're okay with it, but they say things that I'm like, nah. Like, and then they get defensive about it. Like, because it's, you know, it's not a thing that they know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they know it exists now, but they're in a more insular life now because they're older and so forth, and they don't go to work and interact with a bunch of diverse people in their workplace or whatever like that. Mm-hmm. And so it starts to be weird. And the older I get, the more I don't like change.
Well,
I think that's common.
I also think the older you get, there's a lot of other concerns as you're reaching, you know, the older you get, you can't ignore so much the end of your life and when it's coming, how it's coming, what your health is like toward the end of your life. There's just so many other things that you have got to pay attention to that most people can ignore because they're not having the same type of health problems, or, you know, the end of their life is, they just think of it as way too far down the road for them to even consider. So your priorities do kind of naturally and by necessity even have to change.
Your social views become more personal focused because you really hear the ticking of that clock.
Yeah, sure.
Like, I want to get all the life shit out of the way that I want to do before it's over, and there's less years now.
Yep.
So I don't have time for your thing.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm going to die before that comes up, and I don't really, like...
Yep.
I haven't witnessed that a lot, but that makes sense to me that might happen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's the thing. It's like the little bit racist, little bit homophobic, all that stuff that is just hardwired because of when we were babies. You have to acknowledge it, and you have to fight against it. You have to check yourself and be like, is it me? No, seriously, is it me?
Did you want to draw something out of the hat?
That's why I love you, baby. We don't got time.
Oh, okay. Oh, I guess we don't. I finally see the clock in front of us here.
My wife's always there to tell me it's actually me. I don't think I know what to ask you. I don't remember what it was.
Oh, to ask me? I don't know.
Look what I got.
I see that, a Golden Girls thingy.
Thing.
Premium puzzle.
You know what's fascinating?
Are you even going to put that together?
I don't know. I'm sure I will at some point. Oh, really? There goes. 1,000 pieces.
Wow.
I was going to say, I can't find the number of pieces. No, we were at Hobby Corner, and we were looking for birthday gifts for the neighbor. He just turned 7. And Trish was looking in the puzzles, and I come over, and I just saw this, and I'm like, I'm buying that. Hell yeah, I'm buying that. It's just a gorgeous...
It's a good picture.
It is a gorgeous four-person portrait shot of all the Golden Girls.
It's a very good
picture. And I thought when it was in the shelf, this part was covered. Like, this was in the shelf.
Still getting
so I was like, they left Sophia out? That's stupid. And then I pulled it out, and I'm like, oh, there she is. She's just really short. She doesn't have her glasses on either, which just seems weird to me.
Yeah, that is kind of weird.
Yeah, it's adorable.
But also she doesn't... You can tell she's not the oldest person in the group without her glasses on.
1 year younger than Bea Arthur,
yeah.
Yes.
So you can kind of tell without her glasses on.
I want to say Betty White might be the oldest, even though she's the only one still alive. I think Rue McClanahan was always the youngest. I say always, as though it changed.
Yeah.
Somebody caught up and pulled ahead. And, yeah.
Someone caught up and pulled ahead.
Yes, but then they fell. It's like horse racing, but you know, with the passage of time on one's body.
I didn't realize that the time was going so quickly.
Mm-hmm. Time flies when you're having podcasts. So what do you think about that? Do you think that would make a good film?
Oh yeah, sure.
I just like that idea. Well, and the thing is, I feel like you can really hit that intersection of dark comedy. Because I feel like the little sort of speech section can be done kind of scary.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
But then the whole thing's a joke, but it's also going to be eternally unresolved. And there are so many visual cues you can do in a film that I couldn't do. I want to do the things like, no, I'm just kidding. And then like they're like, and then he just like keeps looking at him. You know, I want to do that kind of thing.
No, it would totally work.
And I feel like it's not hard. Well, it's definitely not hard to write. Because we have most of it, and it's short as hell.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it wouldn't be difficult to film, because you just... Like, if you want to be fun, you could do a multi-camera sort of... But, I mean, basically, you need two guys on a couch.
Mm-hmm.
So, that could be good.
Well, for the dramatic moment, you might need to have two cameras sort of slowly moving in and switching back and forth.
There are definite things you
tense
could
music.
Do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ideally, I would get occasional one shots and occasional tight shots
on both of them. Right.
But I don't think it's necessary. And I also think it's doable with our limited resources.
Very limited.
And my limited give a damn. we'll just do it all on my phone. Alright, so go to the blog, people, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us who you think Mr. Erickson's first name was. And also
Milton Erickson.
Meef Erickson.
I don't remember what his middle name is. It starts with an H.
Meef Jehovowitz. Jehovowitz. Dude, I just invented a really awesome word. Jehovowitz. That was a good word. I'm not going to lie.
Not
that
bad.
Has a lot of potential.
Yep.
Oh, Don Rickles died today.
What?
Yep.
I did not know that.
Yep. Just today.
No.
I'm sad, but to be fair, he was 90. I mean, it's not like too soon, you know, but yeah, I am sad. I always kind of took comfort in the fact that somehow he was still going.
Yeah.
But funny thing, Trish finds. Rolling Stone places a little thing like for an ad like that he died so that you'll go click and look at the story. The little thumbnail picture with it. Joan Rivers.
What?
Yeah.
Joan Rivers.
And Trish is like, what the fuck? And it's Rolling Stone. She's like, what the fuck? And I'm like, he would have found that really funny. And she's like, I think she would have too. I'm like, you're right. She also would have found that really funny. So yeah. Mr. Warmth died today at age 90 of kidney failure. You will be missed, you will be oft repeated, and go to the blog and tell us how you feel about Don Rickles' death. Also, write into the hat, so that Coffee doesn't just own our show. I mean, if you're fine with that, we're fine with that, but I feel like you're not, because a lot of people on the street tell me how mad they are about Coffee. So,
yeah.
Like, people I think are strangers. So
that happens all the time.
She's so hated in this town, I don't know what it is. Also like us on Facebook, because nobody does that anymore, and really somebody should. And beyond that, we will talk to you guys next week, about who else died then.
I hope not.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.